Hey, hello everybody. Welcome back to The Doubters. Thursday the 23rd of April, and if you're joining me on record, you'll notice a difference is that I've lost my virtual background, and sad to see it go. I love the imagery I was using, but when I was watching it back, I decided I don't like virtual backgrounds very much. I've been seeing people on the telly, coming on the telly, everybody's going on Zoom, aren't they? So I just find them a bit distracting. So I've lost my virtual background, lost my imagery. I'm going to use that imagery somewhere else, maybe on the book cover. Let's see where it comes up. And also I've got my new headphones, and you can see my microphone now. You couldn't see my microphone before. So I must admit, I find it a little bit distracting having this thing coming in my face. But anyway, I'll get used to it, I'm sure. So it is a sunny spring afternoon here, and I'm joined today, really delighted to be joined today by Paul Collins. And Paul, you're joining us from your home in Buckinghamshire. Would you like to just say hello so people can see you?
Hi, thank you. Thanks, Olivia, for inviting me along. I think I'm in the right place with the doubters and
doubters. Yeah, you certainly are.
Doubters. This isn't Doubters Anonymous. It's public doubters.
No, this is doubters. We're out and out and proud, the doubters. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to introduce you. I'll just explain the format of the session today. People who are joining us here today have been here before, so they know how this goes. But I'm going to introduce you now, and then we're going to have an open conversation for about 30 minutes on our topic today, which is the strength and weakness. Really excited to see where this is going to go. And then after about half an hour, to about 20 to 5, I will open up for anybody who's joined us on the call today to come in and make a contribution or ask a question or whatever they want to do. They can do that on the recording. But also, what I also invite people to do is stay after the recording. I'll turn the recording off at about 10 to 5. And then, are you okay to stay till 5, Paul?
Yeah, happy to hang out.
So then if people don't want to come on the recording, which is absolutely fine and understandable, we'll give you some space at the end to come in and make those contributions or just have a chat about what we've spoken about today, anything that's come up for you. So that's how it's going to go. So let me introduce Paul. Now, Paul is a very dear friend of mine and has had a huge influence on my work. And I think as we go through this session, you'll probably understand why. Paul's background is in the Royal Marines, and he spent 20 years working, probably more than 20 years now, I'd imagine, but working in the field of addiction recovery. For the last 9 years or so, Paul has been working to bring his practice of Iris Yoga Nidra, which is what we're going to talk about today. He's been bringing this practice into prisons, and you've been working with men who are incarcerated, and I think your mission, Paul, seems to be helping them to experience freedom. Would you say that was right?
Yeah, very much so. I think one thing I called me to prison is working with people excluded and working with the biggest shadow, the biggest doubt.
Yeah, wow, really powerful work, and I've heard you talk about this quite a bit. And how I like to introduce people is really through my connection with them when I bring them on here. So I'll say a little bit about that. I think, Paul, I think I've been working with you for 4 or 5 years, can't quite remember, but through workshops and one-to-one work, face-to-face, through the you've been guiding me into this practice of in Iris Yoga Nidra. And really, you're the person who has taken me into those deep, dark places. You've come with me and helped me to really find the strength of that there. So that's what we're going to talk about today. That the topic today is the strength of weakness. And I was thinking about, we don't really know where this conversation is going to go. And I think just in order to make sure I'm not filtering this session, I'm going to give myself permission not to publish the recording if I don't want to. So if it goes somewhere and I feel, well, that's too vulnerable, I might not publish the recording entirely, but we'll see how it goes. It probably won't happen, but I just feel like that would be a good permission to give myself, and we'll see where it goes, because, you know, this stuff is quite vulnerable, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah, so If you want to experience Paul's work a bit deeper, one of the beautiful things about this lockdown is that Paul's work has now been taken online. So I'm really delighted about this because I can experience Paul's work online. And I've been attending your Tuesday evening meditation classes. And if you want to find out more about this practice as we're talking about today, I will send out the link with the email tomorrow so you can contact Paul and take part in his classes because I'm so passionate about Paul's work because I've just found it completely, really magical. So the topic today is going to be the strength of weakness. And the reason that this is going to be the first in a series of talking about this, actually, because the reason I'm bringing this as a topic is that I think this is the biggest challenge in working with self-doubt is how when we open ourselves up to experiencing self-doubt, it takes us directly to this part of ourselves. So this part of ourselves that we consider to be weak. And we, in being able to work with it and accept it, is realizing that it's a strength. And, you know, so Paul, we're going to talk about your work and your perspective on this. So maybe I'm going to start by asking you, Paul, what I'd really perhaps like to start with is I'd love to know a bit about your story and your transition into your work, because obviously your background in the Royal Marines and now doing this, like this work. I mean, I'd love to know a bit about that transition. Would you be happy to talk about
that? Yeah, sure. I mean, the Royal Marines was only a very small part of my life. It was in my youth. Didn't really know where to go. And I there was two things. One's I was told I need discipline in my life. The other was my father's in the Royal Marines and I wanted approval. And my brother had always achieved everything. He tried to join the Marines, couldn't get in. But he went on to a career in the army, but as a very high ranking military officer. So I thought, right, okay, I'll join the Marines. Just I didn't particularly want to be a Marine, but I just wanted to prove it, I guess, to get some kind of recognition. So I got my Green Beret from the commando training, which is one of the toughest basic military trainings in the world. But I didn't really want to be a Marine. I just did it to prove something to others and to myself. Ironically, my brother went on to get a red para berry and a green commando berry. It's not all right. I still can't compete. And I just talk a bit about that because I'll bring it back later on. But in many ways, it was an external validation. You know, and it's where I started to explore stuff later on. It was like it was a shell around the insecurities that I felt deep inside. After I left the Marines, I sort of went into business, selling, went into distribution. So very much sort of corporate, had a distribution company. It was striving for success within business. Underlying it with addictions, primarily alcohol in the beginning. It was all stuff to mask that lack of, I guess, to mask the self-doubt and the insecurities that I had within me. Till I found that all of that stuff, you know, when I lost my business because of my addictions, I fell out with business partners. I had to look at another way. You know, I became interested in recovery, in spiritual practices. I was looking for something. I had some time on my hands after selling my business, my part of the business, to travel and find a new vocation. Wasn't sure what it was, but I kind of knew I had to find some answer within myself, to find some ease within myself because of the insecurity, the lack of self-worth and anxiety. And I guess when I first started changing my life, I didn't get the insecurities. You know, I went around different programs and I thought, you know, because of, in many ways, the military training, I thought, I'm amazing, I'm great, there's nothing wrong with me, I can just crack on. Mm-hmm. I didn't get it when I heard other people talking about low self-esteem. I had a false pride and an arrogance until I realised, actually, there's a lot of insecurities in there. Mm-hmm. Does that give you an idea of a picture of sort of the mm-hmm. journey in? And
it does.
I can go into more detail.
No, that's great. Thank you. I'm being a bit selfish by asking you that, really, because obviously the work I've done with you is... I could tell you all about me, but I don't hear anything about you. I'm like, come on, let's get the story behind this. Brilliant, lovely, thank you. So what I'm hearing actually was that you were met with your insecurities at a certain point. And would you say that that was what took you into the spiritual exploration?
It was a while before I met the insecurities, because if I do workshops or therapies, I knew there was something that wasn't right. I was trying to meet those insecurities full on. You know, right. If I go to a workshop, I'd be the first one want to step up, and it's like, bring it on. I'll smash through it.
Okay, you know, smash through
commandos.
It.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to gentleness through force.
Okay.
So I guess there was two of my patterns. One was impatience. And the others, I had to fight everything. So both of those had to be, trying to choose my word.
Do you want to swear?
Dissolved. No. what's the word? I don't want to say broken in me, but I had to be brought to my knees with them of seeing this. You know, I'm trying to fight and fit. I'm trying to fight to fix something.
Mm.
With force, yeah, it actually needs to be met with compassion and softness.
That's lovely. I love that, Paul. And I think this is really fundamentally what I see, what I've learned through your work, and also what I'm trying to do in my work, is because, well, you know, my path into working with self-doubt is that I tried all these motivational tools to, you know, overcome it. Just crush it, get rid of it, you know, and it never worked. I could get it to work in a circumstance, but it was never sustainable because it would always come back. And yeah, I got sick of doing that. So, you know, so I came into this work and I thought, well, what if self-doubt has a purpose? That question just landed with me about 10 years ago. And I never did anything with that question until I trained as a coach, and I think probably, you know, influenced by you, actually, I started to work with that question, realised I could work with that question. So what if self-doubt has purpose? So what if we could be with self-doubt? And that's where my exploration started. But I think ultimately what it was is changing that pattern of smashing through it. And you talked about meeting gentleness through force and realising that that force...
Meeting force with gentleness.
Meeting force with gentleness. Okay, I thought it was the other way around. Anyway, and I see that. So this is what happens, I think, with this weakness when we're met with these parts of ourselves that we don't like, right? Because they're only parts of ourselves that we consider weak, that we're denying, and then this sort of natural thing is like that comes up. And we fight against it. That seems to be a natural pattern.
Yeah.
And trying to change that pattern is where the challenge is. I wonder if you could say something about that.
I guess for me, with the iris, yoga nidra or iris meditation, it's a non-dual practice, non-dual meditation. And what it's saying, it talks about we're all one, but there's also a duality of the personality. So there's opposites have to exist in everything. And the personality is identifying with opposites. I'm good, I'm bad, I'm happy, I'm sad, whatever. So we see these. And I guess that's where, so I had a lot of force in me, anger, a drive of trying to be positive, just this constant, I've got to succeed. So there's the real effort and drive to succeed. But in that drive to succeed, I will get through this. And it can work, you know. You need some of those things. But sooner or later, it sort of, within that drive, it or within pride, it becomes a false pride and becomes destructive, becomes arrogance. So if I'm trying to fight it, I'm eating fight with fight. So I had to kind of back off and try and dialogue with that fight or that drive within me, which had happened sort of since birth. It was something that just came into life with this drive, which can be really, it's really served me well to keep going within my work, of this kind of desire and determination that I want this to happen. But it's only when I actually start to back off, so there is positives or there's uses with it, but then, okay, back off. Because sometimes the drive and the determination closes doors, it pushes people away, it offends people, it upsets them. Rather than, okay, keep going, but allow it. And so within that, it's otherwise, you get two angry people, they're just trying to force their views on each other. And I guess I learned a lot, I studied a little bit with martial arts and things like that. It's like Aikido. Okay, rather than trying to force or fight that person or thing, which is what I was trying to do in life, okay, step back from it, allow it. So it's then allowing, in some ways, surrendering to the fight, to allow. But my ego or the personality, then I've got to fight, the conditioning. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I think so. And I think what I'm hearing you saying is by well, is that, there's that quote that we use, isn't it? It's like, whatever you resist persists, and like whatever you fight, you strengthen. Whatever resists persists.
So I guess coming back to weakness.
Yeah.
I thought it was weak to surrender, to give in.
Yes.
But it wasn't until I could embrace the strength in surrendering that stuff could happen. Otherwise, with fighting, I was destroying it.
Yeah. And it's resisting that. And I identify with what you're talking about a lot, because that was my background as well, was, coming from a place of survival instinct and trying to prove myself. And I realised that trying to prove myself was actually coming from a place of lack of self-esteem.
Completely.
I felt so in the workplace, for example, is that I had to work that little bit harder than everybody else to feel like I was on a level. You know, I had to put in that bit extra hours. I had to be that extra just to feel like I was on a level with people.
And as soon as you say that, I can't remember the word you used, but it was like that having to prove myself. I had a memory then of me at school.
Yeah.
There was such this determination to succeed, but no matter how hard I tried, the more I tried, exams and everything, it was desperation inside this little boy. I just wouldn't. The only time then it started to switch, when I could start to see actually beliefs around, I'm not good enough, I'm stupid, I don't get it, I don't understand it, no one's listening, all that stuff. Okay, once I could start listening to that young lad in me, to start listening to him, the pain he's in of, okay, just right, Paul, to be kind and gentle to him rather than keep pushing him.
I hear what you're saying there. So it feels like the challenge was, and I think the challenge has been for me, is instead of feeling like that's not good enough, I need to try harder, is realizing where that striving is coming from, and meeting that with compassion.
What's driving it?
And this is where we go with the self-doubt work very quickly. This is why I really like working with this window, this lens of self-doubt. Actually takes us there very quickly. Where self-doubt shows up in people's lives is showing us where we feel we're not good enough, an area where we feel we're not good enough. So then what we do is we go into all those messages, and sometimes those outworn messages that have been running along like a script for our lives that often we're not really aware of running. And in the coaching environment, we can do that in a very safe space. So that's like we get to kind of observe it together. And sometimes there can be a lot of humour there, actually. Instead of meeting with that judgment, it's like we get to meet it, we get to observe it. We can meet it with humour, we can meet it with curiosity. And, it just becomes a whole more gentle experience. But I think the reason I talk about the strength of weakness is because, we consider these things to be weak, we shun them, but actually when we learn to work with them and learn to accept them and learn to embrace them, is that then with that awareness that becomes a strength. Is that what you found, Paul?
My mind was just sort of picking on bits. I was thinking of the martial arts, or some of the guys I work with. There can be this heady external strength. People can look at strength, it's either as force, or maybe that's just my perception of force, violence, aggression, maybe the whole thing of war, of society, power. They think that then the weakness, surrendering, is that there's a weakness, but it's an energy, it's a feeling. If you think things, I come to mind something like Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Of some of those martial artists, even the monks, they can have a strength without fighting. And it's it's starting to embrace the aggression with a gentleness. So if I use it sort of teaching yoga or in movement, how you need the strength. I do balances, or sort of, I like the analogy of a tree.
Mm.
It's got a real solid strength in the trunk, but it needs the gentleness to sort of move in the wind. Otherwise, it's going to, as soon as the wind comes, it's just going to take it out the roots. So it needs that flow as well. So you need that grounded strength, and you can bring that into the body work.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, the gentleness to move. So there's such a beauty in that.
The balance of the energies, like the strength and the gentleness, not the weakness, the gentleness. And I think for me, I had this what I thought was strength for so many years, and it was a facade, right? It was a protection.
Completely. And if you have that strength, you keep driving and driving and driving, mentally, emotionally, physically. Yeah, sooner or later you're gonna have a burnout.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You need that. Okay, I've got to stop for a little bit. No, I've got to keep going. Keep cracking on.
This feels like a human story almost. It feels like I don't think it's the Western world, I think, but it's that kind of striving for what we think is success, and these kind of messages we take. This feels like the natural sort of way to protect myself, be strong, be tough, or what I thought was tough actually was striving on through, like I say, working like an idiot, and just pushing myself all the time and never giving myself. I couldn't sit with myself, Paul. I can meditate now. I can sit with myself. I could not sit with myself. That was the biggest challenge. I try to sit with myself, I'd be antsy. I'd have to do something. I'd have to get up. I just, always on the go, and it is just exhausting. But I think what I was kind of going to point out there was that, what I thought was strength was some kind of protection. What I was protecting, obviously, is I didn't want people to see my vulnerability. And actually, what I'm covering up here with this protection is this, this gentleness. I can't afford to show you this gentleness because, that's not comfortable for me. But now
and people can perceive your people can perceive that as weakness, and this is what I get with some of the guys in prison.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to have this facade, or it's this, you know, one of the toughest guys I've met in there, and he talks about toxic masculinity. And these are some seriously tough guys externally, but then they said, I just can't keep this facade up. It's exhausting, it's killing me.
Yeah.
And yet, once they can be vulnerable, a different strength comes out of it.
Well, I think that's it. That's it. It's a different kind of strength, isn't it? And it's more for me that the kind of strength I feel in having done some of this work is that, like, the beauty of acceptance, that allowing myself to be gentle, but also it's like I don't have to protect anything anymore.
Yeah.
There's nothing really to protect. I mean, I'm sure I do still protect myself in all these strange ways. You know, obviously out there in the world, I don't open myself up to threat. I would have done that more in the past, actually. But I don't, there's nothing, if I've accepted this part of myself, you know, if I've learned to be with this part of myself, then I'm okay. I'm okay here talking about it, you know. There's nothing to hide anymore. And then for me, the freedom, that's the point, isn't it? That is the point, the freedom, but also the connection that I make with people, because I think that was what was driving me, is that I wanted to feel like I belonged somewhere. And I would never belong anywhere until I could kind of belong with myself, until I could really genuinely accept myself for who I was. And now that kind of, that belonging question is not so much of a problem, because I know that I can connect with people, and I've got really decent people in my life nowadays, and I get so much joy through this connection, and especially the people I connect with through my work. This self-doubt work has been such a privilege for me, and that's what fills me up, that's what gives me joy. And I wouldn't have got there if I hadn't been able to go into those parts of myself.
And as you were talking there, I was also thinking this journey from the head to the heart, and this, you know, it's thrown around the word, oh, love yourself, you've got to love yourself. And as a concept, it's bandied about a lot in spiritual circles. But for me, the only way I can really love myself and accept myself is seeing the bits where I feel unlovable, not good enough, you know, within the supposedly weakness, rather than just cognitively saying, yeah, I love myself, yeah, I'm amazing, I'm wonderful, you know, but deep down, actually, I don't.
Yeah.
You know, there's insecurities, there's the weakness.
Yeah.
Okay, so, welcome that in.
So we try to do that on a head level, almost. We try to.
Yeah, you can't do it on. The only way you can move beyond it is feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
My experience.
Yeah. Going into that feeling. One thing that you say in your work, which I really love, and I'd love you to speak a bit about, and I'll talk about my experience of this as well, is that when you meet that part of yourself, you know, that part of ourselves that we've been avoiding and denying, is how nothing needs to be changed.
Yeah.
You talk about that, don't you?
Yeah.
Can you say a bit about that, what that means, what you mean by that?
Often we're trying to fix change because there's something wrong with us. You know, we do therapies, and I've done it, I've been all over the world with something to try and get some answers. But ultimately, there's some things within us that we might not be happy with, might be mental, emotional, or physical, that we can't change. You know, there's some things, however much I want it to be different, that's how it is.
Mm.
But within that, the things that we're trying to change, fix, alter, get rid of, cut out of us, or anything else, the only way to really heal it is to become at ease with it, to welcome it, and feel what a belief that's behind it. You know, I'm not good enough, or this, or I can't do this, or that, okay. But by accepting it, there's a real power in that, because that's how it is. And on one level, we can do that within ourselves, mentally, emotionally, physically. But then, okay, how can I meet that in every moment of my life? You know, I can bitch and moan about, you know, current restrictions and restraints, what's going on. Okay, but that's how it is. doesn't mean that I have to stand there, oh, that's how it is, I can't change. It's okay. So it's within the meditation when you take it to life. This is my situation right now with whatever's going on. Part of the meditation is welcoming everything as it is.
Mm.
And as we welcome it, whether it's a thought, a feeling, an emotion, a situation, how does it make me feel? And what is this feeling? What does it want? What does it need? And what action can I take? So it's not completely passive sitting there. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it makes sense to me because I've been through the process with you. Of that going into a feeling and what does it want or what does it need? And I can tell you that it's not an easy process to go into. It sounds, when we talk about this on a logical level, oh yeah, well that sounds quite simple, but going there with a difficult, challenging feeling, emotion, and sitting with it rather than trying to do something to change it. And then you talk about what does it want, what does it need, and what action can I take? Is that the acceptance process?
I guess for me, and I was talking to one of the governors, and why the group seemed to be so successful in the prison, is because within all of us, we want to be seen and heard. So I'm dealing with a population that's constantly, they're excluded, they're not seen, they're not heard. So suddenly, just by getting a group together and just allowing them discussion, and where some of these topics within the RS practice is 10 steps.
Mm.
Within these 10 steps, we'd have a discussion. So we'd maybe talk about emotion, feeling, and what does that mean to them? And we then allow them just to, okay, as it's an open discussion, you know, what's that mean to you? And we're, again, not teaching, we're not imposing, we're not trying to tell them this is how it should be, but they're just, they get a sense of just like, wow, this is the most powerful part of their week, but they're seen and heard.
Mm.
And I use that as a group example. So when I'm doing one-to-one, or even in some of the other groups in the community, it's seeing these parts of ourselves that want to be seen and heard.
Yeah.
And it's generally a belief that we've been formed from an abandoned part of ourselves growing up. And you work with it, and a belief might turn into an experience of a small child has been, you know, hidden in a corner and just left there for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And when you start to dialogue with these parts of the psyche, generally they just want to be acknowledged.
Mm.
They want to be accepted. They want to be included. So within other work that I've done with family constellations, seeing the strength of within a system, in a family where parts, you know, we're looking to what's excluded,
yeah, in
family. We're also doing that within ourselves. What part of ourselves has been excluded? And often that might be the weakness. It might be the vulnerability. Let's just crack on, you know. Stop crying.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. What about the small child that's crying?
Yeah.
What does he or she want and need?
Yeah. And of course,
dialoguing with that.
That's been my exact experience of it. And I've gone back to this six-year-old so many times in the work, and that I discarded, and I didn't really know that I did that, but I've come across that in the work, and it's how learning how to integrate that part of myself you talk about. And I guess, you know, this is the exclusion, the power of these parts that have been excluded, and bringing them back in. It's really powerful.
And I think on that point, it's, this is where it's not therapy, because it's not a fix. We've got to fix her.
Yeah.
Because that part of the child may be deeply traumatized, and we don't know what they've all gone through, and it's unique to everyone. But it's like going back, and it may take just one visit. Hi, you know, I just want to be acknowledged. Okay, right, that's, we're done. it may be that they stuck there and they still don't trust you.
Yeah.
And it may take a week, a month, a year, a lifetime. They may never trust you again.
Yeah, just laughing because it's, you know, of the process I've been through with my work and yeah, it's quite astonishing really how it all plans out. And I think just fairly recently, you know, on that note of realizing that nothing needs to be changed, is that I realized that actually that six-year-old child actually had a lot of wisdom, because she knew that I needed protecting, whereas my ego would have been, oh, I can look after myself, you know, at six.
That's the force and the cracking on and moving on. I don't care, which is actually masking the hurt little child.
Yeah, well, the little child actually that knew that I needed protecting, so I found all these ingenious ways to protect myself, and that's what's a lot of been the you know, meeting that weakness, the gentleness has been getting through those barriers of protection, and that's like an ongoing journey for me. So it manifested in all sorts of ingenious ways, actually. But what I realized that there was a lot of wisdom there in that six-year-old, and that feels like, yeah, good.
Some other trauma work I've done, it was explained to me, you know, there's a minimum of three splits in the psyche. You've got this survival part of ourselves. It just keeps going, surviving life. And a lot of people are just in survival.
Yeah.
You've then got the traumatized, damaged, hurt, wound, whatever name you want to put on it. And then you've got the healthy part.
Yeah.
Often the healthy part's only quite small. So it's growing that to allow that to integrate the survival and the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so IRES means integrative restoration.
Yeah.
So just by doing these meditations, we naturally integrate it and restore ourselves to wholeness. So it's a coming together of these disconnected parts of ourselves that have been left behind, and just going back and picking the pieces up.
Yeah, and of course, this doesn't happen on a cognitive level, does it? Because it can't.
No, because the mind is keep trying to protect you from the pain that it might have felt being abandoned or excluded.
Totally. Yeah, of course. It's survival, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a question here coming from Irfan, and Irfan has joined us. He's in Pakistan. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, Irfan. Irfan.
Yeah, and he said, so does it fit in all situations? Does it apply to all situations? So he's talked about, for example, mental health issues. Could you say something about how you work with mental health issues?
When my teacher, Dr. Richard Miller, said he'd never met anyone that he couldn't work with. And often we put labels on a lot of these illnesses and everything else. I'm not dismissing that. But for a while I was working in the mental health wing in one of the prisons. And when I first went in, I was just meeting them. One thing you're learning in the IRS training, just to be a decent human being and to meet people with compassion and kindness. But that's not just a weakness. It's not all love and light and all that stuff. So when I first went in, I was just meeting them as very damaged people, just meeting them however damaged they were, but with some kindness and just not trying to fix, just sit with some of them and just, hi, how you doing? Just listen to them. After a while, I freaked out a bit and I thought, I'm way out of my depth here. I started in some ways buying into the medical model of, you know, naming everything, and I'm not saying this is wrong, but I then bought into there's something wrong, and I'm not saying there's not something wrong that might need some special medical help, but I then got caught up in this, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
I've got to do something. I need more training.
Yeah.
And suddenly I think, I can't do this. I then did go on some other courses and everything else, but it just showed me this sense of, one, the strength of just being kind and caring and just meeting somewhere at. So there was one guy I worked with. I'd go up to his cell every week and I'd say, do you want to come and join us for the yoga? And some of the mental health was so serious. Some of them could only sort of stay with us for about 30 seconds. They couldn't do much yoga because they're so busy, they're so stressed and struggling with life. They couldn't really stay on the mat for very long. So this one guy I went up to and said, you know, would you like to come and join us? And say no. Occasionally I'd just have a little chat with him and just meet him. And a couple of years later, he came up to me in the main prison and said, I want to thank you. I said, well, why is that? He said, every week you'd come to the door, even though you knew I wouldn't come to the session, to ask me how I was. And he said, thank you for including me. And it was like, wow. And you know, that he found that someone cared about him and they included, and it wasn't some big thing, but it just really rocked me to see how much that meant to him each week that I would just ask him. I don't know if that answers your question. I found maybe it's gone off a little bit, but it's, I guess even mental health is a label. Yeah. And what we're saying in the meditation is actually there's a part of us that is undamaged. And it's knowing that the personality might have a disease that we've got a label on. I'm not saying that's not necessary because I'm not a doctor. But ultimately there is also, if you remember, no matter what you've gone through, no matter how bad the mental health, and I've had my own struggles, there is a part that is undamaged. Mm. There's a part that's whole.
And Irfan, if you want to come on, just bear in mind we have got the recording on at the moment. You can feel free to unmute yourself and come on. Otherwise, you can come on when we turn the recording off and contribute. You know, if you want to, just unmute yourself. But I'll just say a little bit about that, the mental health sort of aspect from my experience. And I have a condition which, well, it's not diagnosed, I'm self-diagnosed, because I didn't realize there was anything going on with me. I have this sound sensitivity condition called misophonia, which makes certain sounds, I'm very sensitive to certain sounds, and it has quite a strong reaction in me. I didn't know there was anything, I didn't know it was a condition for so many years. I thought it was just me being irritable, moody. I thought it was me, something wrong with me, that I should be changing. And I was in a battle with this condition for so many years. And when I realised that this was something going on, so there's very little known about it, but what they do know, it is a neurological condition. There is actually a part of the brain which is, I've taken part in some trials to do with this, you know, so they've studied my brain. So there is something going on in my brain. It's like, and I relate this to this protection thing, actually, is when these sounds come, it's like, you know, I go into protection mode, fight or flight immediately. And so what helped me in understanding that it was a condition. So I haven't had a medical diagnosis, but I identify with this known condition, which is very little known about. Yeah, it helped me to understand that it wasn't just something wrong with me. So having the label, if you like, was helpful in that sense. But the condition that I have is my personal journey through it. And this is actually what took me into meditation practice, was trying to be with this condition. So trying to accept the experience of this condition, which is intolerable, still intolerable.
And I guess that's my, I had a condition that no specialist, no medical person could give me an answer for. So the only way I could come to terms with it was, I guess, embrace it and to see what it's showing me, and how I found, this is what I meant at the beginning, we can't change certain things. Yeah. But there's a peace when there's an acceptance, and then it's like that condition becomes a gift.
Yes, and I see that in my circumstances, because even though this doesn't feel nice, it feels intolerable, it's very difficult experience to have, it's driven me towards a meditation practice. I don't believe I would be able to commit to a daily meditation practice if it hadn't been for this condition.
So and likewise.
It motivates me, yeah.
And this is where I come to the prison, so saying to the guys in there, you know, I said to Richard, I can't take this back to the prison as part of it. It's like, what's your deepest heart's desire? What's your deep wish?
Yeah.
And I said, they're all going to say they want to be free. So they said, okay, tell them to describe a time when they felt free. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll try that. So this is where it's not something cognitive.
Yeah.
So I took it back. First guy said, okay, what does it want? He said, well, I'm serving a long sentence. I want to be free. So is there a time in your life you felt free? Yeah, I used to go skydiving and scuba diving. So we went through and we had a discussion. I said, okay, describe the time, explain it, or describe the feeling when you were free. So he described the time of skydiving. And even though he's locked in prison, and I've done it with guys in a cell, he lay on the floor. I described the feeling, the experience he went through, his words, the air. And he's gone up. I won't use the expletives, but it's like, I'm free. So part of him is free. So even within a mental health issue that's been diagnosed, it's the identification with that.
Mm.
And I'm not saying there's not other treatments that may be needed, medication or anything else, but there is still a part that actually hasn't got the mental health problem.
Wonderful.
There's still a part that's completely okay.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to bring this.
That answers her question.
Well, I'm going to bring this to a close. And if Erfan wants to come on after the recording, and he can do that. Otherwise, I'm sure he'll write.
Thank you for the question, Erfan.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Erfan. And otherwise, I'm sure he'll write to me. We have a lot of written communication with each other. But anyway, thank you for the people who've joined us here today. And thank you to anybody who's listened to this recording. I hope you've really got something from this conversation, and I hope you've been able to experience Paul as I've experienced him, because I really, really love your work, Paul, and I just found it so powerful. I will post up the link to your meditation group, which is a donation, it's a donation basis, this group on a Tuesday evening, and the donation, the money goes towards supporting your work in prisons, which you can't do at the moment, obviously. And yeah, just thank you so much for being here, Paul. Is there anything else you want to say just before we close out?
Well, thanks for the invite and for the dialogue. It's a joy to do that. And I just, it comes back to the question of, I can't do something. So the prisons have been in lockdown, but what we can do is we've actually produced, or we're in the process of producing a course they can do in their cells. We're putting final touches to a couple of books. So,
wow.
Okay, we can't physically go in, but there's still work that can be done. That's, I've been busier than ever producing this stuff since the lockdown. So
yeah.
There's usually an action in there, whereas we stay a victim to this thing. I can't do anything, so I'm powerless. Okay,
yeah.
Powerless, but what can you do? What's the action? So
that's what the power.
Yeah, but thank you so much, Olivia, and thank you everyone who joined us.
Right, so I'm going to turn the recording off now, but just to say, next week I'm going to be continuing on this theme of the strength of weakness, and I've got another former Marine coming along, actually, to talk about, he's a leadership consultant in California, and he's going to come and talk about his perspective on the strength of weakness. So I hope you will join me for that. I'll see you next week.